I think that what owu means to me is all about enthusiasm. And I think that can take so many different forms. Obviously, as a professor, I'm really excited when students are enthusiastic about my subject area, which is biology. And I think probably students that have taken my classes can tell you that I am super enthusiastic about biology. I love to be the person to dispel myths that people maybe think about, or get to tell someone that really cool story that relates some animal to the science that we're learning. But the broader part of it is I love it when students actually get really enthusiastic about their classes or about their research or about their travel or their sports team, whatever it is that makes them enthusiastic. That's what owu is to me. I think it's almost universal that we get a really great group of enthusiastic students.
Welcome to Bishop Banter, your guide to owu. Here are your hosts, Ohio Wesleyan alumni Courtney Dunn and Connor Green.
Welcome back to Bishop Banter, your guide to owu. I'm Courtney.
And I'm Connor. And today we'll be talking about thinking big through the owu connection. Courtney, this topic is always so interesting to me because every year I get to see those giant research boards that our students put up to just show all of these cool projects that they've done and what they've gotten involved with. There's always so many different types of research and different topics that they've chosen that are always just so interesting. And I'd love to hear your thoughts a little bit on, you know, why that research is so important to the Ohio Wesleyan experience.
Yeah, I love this conversation because our students are doing research in so many different areas. So it's not just our natural science students who are doing research. It's our social science students and our humanities students and our art students who are not just learning how to execute research, but they're learning how to write grants to fund their research. So they're really going from point A all the way to point Z. They're not just doing, okay, we're just going to do A and B, and our students are going to know how to do that. They're going to know how to get the funding for their research and think of the project. Like, our students are thinking of what they want to study. It's not just, okay, here's the projects that you have the choices of. It's, okay, what do you want to do? And our students are thinking so big and either doing research right down the road or taking their research global and going to a lot of different places to execute that research in all of the different fields that our students have the opportunity to explore. So I really am so excited to talk about research and those opportunities here at Ohio Wesleyan.
That's one of the biggest things that I love that you said was that our students get to pick it themselves. They get to go out and think big and really just dive into those things that they love. And to help us learn a little bit about what those things are, we'll be bantering today with Shayla Hankinson.
Welcome back to Bishop Banter, your guide to owu. Today, we're going to be bantering with Shayla Hankinson, the Associate Professor of Zoology and fellow owu alum. So thank you so much for being here today, Shayla.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. We're super excited today to be talking about research opportunities at owu, and more specifically, the Think Big part of the owu connection. I know there's so many different aspects to that thinking big, but just to kick us off, if you could tell us a little bit more about what you do here, your position, and then we'll dive in.
Yeah, so I'm an associate professor of zoology, and I teach a variety of classes, including one of the intro classes, Organisms in Their Environment. I teach animal behavior and evolution and some of the travel learning. And also, I do research on trying to understand how animal behavior influences speciation.
Wow, I love that. If you could elaborate a little bit more on your research that you're doing.
Sure.
We would love to hear more about that.
Yeah, so one of the things that I became really interested in graduate school was how do we go from having maybe one group of animals to two populations, two different groups that are a little bit different, and then maybe in a little more time, they're a little bit more different, and that those differences can accumulate over time and eventually perhaps lead to new species. And I was really interested in how that population level little differences leads to those bigger differences. And for me, one of the most interesting parts of that is animal behavior, specifically mating behaviors. My mom is so proud. so I am interested in how male courtship behaviors and female responses and female mate preferences can lead to these differences, because depending on the population that you're in, those can actually be very different. And I study these beautiful little group of fish called sailfin mollies. They're related to the mollies that people keep in the pet store. Like, you can buy mollies. Mine just come from the coast off of Florida. And the males have these beautiful fins, and they're brightly colored, and they do this great courtship display to the females, and the females can decide whether or not to mate with them. And depending on which population you're in, those are slightly different. And so over the long run, I've been interested in trying to track some of those differences, understand where those differences may come from. Ultimately, I'm interested in some of the genes that may influence those differences. And if we go back, I'm currently studying one species, but I've studied two other species, and I'm interested in, you know, if I look at those population differences, can they tell me something about those three different species? So if by understanding little things, can I understand that bigger question of how do we have so many species? Where do they all come from?
That's really cool.
I think so. But obviously I geek out about it. So yeah, I think it's fascinating.
Yeah. So was that type of research that you're interested in sparked at all from things you did here as a student?
Indirectly. So here I actually did an independent study with Dr. Goetz, and I studied fish of all things then as well. But I was much more interested in movement of fish and how they moved around. And I really thought that I was going to be a herpetologist, study lizards and reptiles and everything, and to go into ecology, which is what my project here at Ohio Wesleyan was. And then I accidentally had coffee with someone in animal behavior. She was a new faculty member at Ohio University. And I sort of got started going down this idea of mating preferences and understanding how that worked. So I sort of caught the research bug when I was at Ohio Wesleyan. And then it shifted a little bit to what I actually did.
I love that. How did you find those research opportunities when you were here? I know for a lot of students, it's not just about doing the research, but you have to actually find that research and find those opportunities. So how does that work?
When I was a student, I was a work study student. And so my job was working in the department, and I did everything from taking care of our rats that we used all the way through washing glassware and washing the lab dishes and working in the museum. But by working in the department and taking classes, I got to know the different professors and had taken some of Dr. Goetz's classes, and at some point just sort of said, wow, he does really good research. I was really interested in ecology after his ecology class and talked to him about doing that. I wasn't quite sure even then how it would work out, and it just managed. The timing worked out well, and he was able to bring me into his lab. And we studied, like I said, these fish that live in the Delaware Run. Not everybody knows that this little stream that runs through campus has tons of fish in it. And we still have classes that go out and look at those. And there are deeper pools, and then the fish can move between these pools. And I was really trying to understand that. And there were times it was so cold, we would have chest waders on and our winter coats tucked into the chest waders, sort of like crashing through ice to get the electrofishing equipment through to catch the fish. But it happened in the warm weather too. That was way more fun. And so yeah, I sort of figured if I went through all of that and still found that to be this super fun thing, then obviously I was a little bit interested in research.
I love that. That's such a great story to tell too, of like going into the Delaware Run that runs through campus in the winter,
sure.
Only in Ohio.
Right.
Our students from California are like, you got in water in Ohio in winter. But no, you do what you do for research.
Right.
So I love that. So can you talk a little bit more about the summer science research program? Because that's a huge part of research for students and what that looks like and how students get involved with that as well.
Yeah, so our Summer Earth Science Research Program is great. It's this 10-week summer research, And really, it's sort of a full-time research job. So you work with your faculty member every day, or Monday through Friday, maybe if you're lucky. I have fish, so, you know, our fish get fed every day and tanks get cleaned, so I see my students a lot. Faculty apply to be part of it, and then students apply as well, and the committee matches up faculty with the students that are interested in, with them. So students stay on campus, they get free housing, and there is a stipend involved so that you have money to live on during the summer and everything. But really the best part of it is getting to work one-on-one with faculty and really getting part of that research environment. So at some bigger schools, the graduate students maybe have this kind of experience where they're working really intensely with faculty and their full-time job is research. We're able to replicate that here by doing this kind of a program. So it's, you know, well, what really has to happen on a daily basis for research to happen? And you get an idea of the pace, right? Because research is really great, but, you know, when we read about it in textbooks or we present it in classes, it's like this beautiful story and it's all wrapped up with a bow. And that is just not how it happens. It takes a long time and there are lots of dead ends and there are lots of false starts and failures. And I think that when you're here for that full summer, that 10 weeks and get to work on that, you see that full picture. The good part is you also get to be here for all the successes, and those successes can be really small. You know, maybe an experiment worked or a fish did a beautiful courtship display. That's what makes my day. but you also get to see that full picture. And for our students that might be interested in going on to research, I think it's really critical that they know what that research experience is like. But even for our students that are maybe going on to medical school or to work with animal husbandry, like at a zoo or animal rehab, to know what kinds of information and process goes into some of these research projects that you know, they may just be working with the data that came out of research, that I think having that full picture is really key.
I think that also goes back really well to our liberal arts episode in learning how to deal with roadblocks. We talked a lot with Linda Hall about the soft skills that you get from a liberal arts education, and I feel like that really correlates into, okay, your research didn't go as planned. How do you veer from that and regroup and start over? If you have to start over at the beginning, or if you can kind of go back to where you're at and regroup from there. So I really love that aspect of it.
We actually have hallway conversations with even among the faculty about that, of even, you know, faculty on campus that are doing all of these amazing research projects. Some days you'll see them and they're just like, ugh, this thing failed and it didn't work. And all of these things I planned for went wrong. And you have to give yourself a day. But you also do have to be the kind of person that can give yourself a day or two and then be like, all right, so what's next? What comes next? And I think that, it's funny because with any subject, but I think with the sciences, because when we're talking about it, we are so presenting this sort of data driven, you know, perfect picture that I think it's really key, especially there for students and for all of us to know that it's not always a straight path and that there's a whole process to it. And when it goes well, it's great. But that's just not always the case.
Yeah, we feel that.
And now, a short break for this week's Rock Solid Advice from Ohio Wesleyan's 16th president, Rock Jones.
Take the time to try things you might not otherwise have tried. The most important findings that come in research come when the researcher is willing to be creative, to test new ground. And then as a corollary, don't be discouraged if something doesn't work. For instance, if a scientific experiment does not produce the hypothesis that was presented, or if it for some reason fails, that's not a reason to give up. That's a reason to do it again in another way. And some of the most important scientific inventions have come because people were persistent. They did not give up. They kept going. So my advice in research is dig deep, think big, don't give up.
And now, back to Bishop Banter.
So with those students who do summer science research, they are there for, you know, 3 months or however in conducting these different research programs. What do they do with that after those 3 months? You know, after that research is done, do they do anything with those, you know, findings that they've come up with?
Yeah, so a lot of students will continue their summer science projects into an independent study, something like that. You know, if there's almost never is something done, is a project done within those 10 weeks. And so a lot of students will, you know, apply to do an independent study with faculty and then continue that on. What can make it really nice is when we have a student that maybe did summer science, they're going to continue an independent study, and then maybe there's another more junior student that's also going to come in. And so you get a lot of peer-to-peer interaction where, okay, so maybe I'm teaching and I can't be there as often, right, as I am during the summer, but now I've got, you know, a small lab group that's helping each other out. And so they get to learn research from each other and to sort of learn that process. Obviously, our students present at things like the Conradi's Summer Symposium, where students will present their research there. And then some people are just sort of, they've got that research, they know what it's like, and they can decide, you know, maybe that can push them towards, you know, if they decide they want to go into a more of a research field, sometimes that happens. Other students are like, okay, that was great, that was interesting, and now I want to go and never do that again. That's okay. it's not for everybody. So I think there's a lot of different ways that it can sort of spin off from there, depending on what the student really wants to do.
Wow. I think another huge part of this research component is the OWU connection, and we have research as one of the 5 aspects of the OWU connection, and thinking big is one of our big things. Like, we want students not to just think of, okay, I can do this small opportunity here, but thinking even bigger of, can I go global with this opportunity? Mm-hmm. So how do you feel like research is thinking big, or what are students doing to think in that larger capacity for research?
Within the research projects themselves, I think some of the great opportunities are to take what you've maybe learned to do, even if it's not the specific research project, but to take that experience and then use it to help structure maybe your own sort of question or study. And then, you know, we have students that use theory to practice grants to then do research all over the place, to really get great internships and you know, join different research organizations or animal organizations that go all over the planet. And then also to present some of those. So I'm taking a group of 8 students to a animal behavior conference later this month. And 2 of those students are presenting posters on theory to practice research that they did at the Columbus Zoo, but have also had students that are presenting research, you know, from all over. And so doing it, you know, sort of doing the background and some of the learning and the theory part here, and then doing research that then goes beyond Ohio Wesleyan, and then presenting it in ways that it can reach an even broader sort of audience, which is really cool. It you know, shows people what students at our campus are doing, and then also gives them a way to spread that knowledge that they got a little bit wider. And so that it's not just, well, that observation I did that one time, it becomes really, you know, another scientific data touch point for other people that, you know, even outside of WU may then jump off from there.
So being able to take students for something like that is really awesome, just to have a professor there with you to see what it's like, to have that confidence in you to present those things that you've found. But along with that, are you traveling with students or going with students to do their own research opportunities? Is that something you participate in?
It depends. And so some of our students that do more local research, then sometimes I'm able to see some of those. I'm the liaison with the Columbus Zoo. And so some of our students do a more formal husbandry type internship there. But some of our students actually do research type internships, and I work really closely with those students. Some of the traveling with students to do research, though, has really been more on being part of travel learning trips where students will conduct research projects as part of their travel learning. So I have taught the island biology course twice, and that goes to Ecuador and the Galapagos Islands, and it's amazing, and oh my gosh. But for that, every student proposes and does all the background for an observational research that we do while we're down there. And so that's this other sort of whole way of taking this sort of background that they might have in experimental design and designing a project, and then getting to go to one of the coolest places on Earth where it has, you know, this sort of history of science, and then being able to do your own research there, even if it's just a little project.
So you mentioned the island biology class, going to the Galapagos Islands. You did that when you were a student here, right?
I did, yes.
So now it's like full circle.
It's amazing. So I did that trip my graduation year, and so 1995. Wow. And so so I did that trip, and definitely as a student, I thought of it as a once-in-a-lifetime trip, and it is. It's just so incredible, and you know, it's definitely like being one of those places where you're in your own nature documentary and there are giant tortoises and marine iguanas and all of these birds, and you're on a ship that is sort of just for us. It's just Ohio Wesleyan students on this cruise that's going from island to island. So I did that as a student, and then exactly 20 years later taught the course and got to go back. And so that was really fun for me, not only to get to go back, but also to sort of understand it from a conservation standpoint and to sort of see, okay, well, what's changed in those 20 years? Yes, there are more people. Yes, there are a lot more tourists, and that's an ongoing concern. But also, how are the islands doing to sort of mitigate some of those tourist concerns? How are they managing visitors to the islands? And so that was fun as well to sort of see the changes there.
Wow. That's amazing. Every time I hear about that trip, I'm like, that sounds so cool.
It's so cool.
I'm not a science person. I was a sociology person, but that sounds great.
and we, you know, we actually sometimes get people from across the spectrum. So when I went as a student, one of my student buddies that went was a Spanish major. And she actually went because she wanted the chance to go and visit. This was before travel learning was more broad across the university when I was a student. And so she wanted to go just as sort of an immersion aspect. And she had a lot of fun, you know, just sort of interacting with the crew and was much more interested in the human side than some of the rest of us were. And it's a great experience.
Wow. I was just going to ask, the travel learning component is really exciting and really awesome, mm-hmm. but what happens for students who you said that they design their own project and they're preparing this, and then they get there and maybe the findings are not what they thought or things don't go as planned? How do students adjust, or how do you prepare for being able to adjust when you get there?
It never always works out, ever. And even this past time that I went, each time you go, it's a little bit different. You maybe see different organisms, and you go to different islands. And so, for example, a lot of students this time had ideas about watching the iconic birds. They're called blue-footed boobies. They're amazing, and they're goofy. And for whatever reason, the groups of islands that we went to this past time, we saw blue-footed boobies, but not in nearly the numbers as before. So everybody that had a blue-footed booby project was suddenly like, okay, so now what are we? And so Dr. Carino and I, who is the other faculty member there, just quickly worked with those students. Okay, so you were going to ask this question about blue-footed boobies. Can we ask it about red-footed boobies instead? Or can we do a comparison between these different things? Because there's always something that doesn't work out. And then on the flip side, we had a student who was really interested in these sort of very large, agile birds called frigate birds. And frigate birds are they're crazy. They have this lifestyle called kleptoparasitism. And they basically chase and harass other birds that are flying into the islands until they give up the meal that they just caught.
Oh, my gosh!
And, And they're really wild. And you see a lot of these, but we were like, well, you know, I don't know if we're going to see enough of those. You will see them, but you might not see this behavior. We saw a ton of it. She saw all of it. And we were like, yeah, so we lied about that, obviously. And so we had this flip side of, you know, some students that we were like, oh, not sure about that. And it totally worked out. And other students were like, well, of course, we'll see hundreds of blue-footed boobies. We're like, just kidding. We're going to switch that around. It's back to that part of research where you have to be a little bit flexible and sort of go with the flow. And, you know, there's nothing like being on the equator and beautiful islands to help sort of calm that if you need to sort of switch gears.
The sunshine helps.
It does. It does.
Warm weather, especially this time of year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So something I wanted to ask kind of going off of that was there's all of these opportunities for students to do research, whether it's, you know, thousands of miles away on a sunny beach or here in Ohio.
Sure.
or all over the place. They're getting these opportunities and they're getting this experience. How does that set them up for, you know, after the graduation? You know, what does it do for them, whether they're going into a career or grad school? You know, what does it do to help them?
I think that in general, one of the things that students learn from research, well, we've talked about resiliency, and I think that that's a key thing of that sometimes things just don't work out and you have to be able to sort of switch gears and move along. Obviously, working closely with faculty or with whoever you're working with as part of that research, it allows us to, you know, later when students need letters and they need, you know, someone to say, hey, what's it like working with this person? Then we've got, you know, firsthand knowledge of saying, well, you know, here's all the things that they were able to do. And when something went wrong, they were able to regroup and move in this new direction. So from a professional standpoint, there's that. But I also think just the ability to take careful notes, to be observant and to, you know, if you're working as part of a larger lab, working as part of a team to coordinate schedules, those are things that even if you don't go into research and graduate school are really key. So like I said, I work with a lot of our students that intern at the Columbus Zoo. You may not do a whole lot of research, especially when you're first starting out as a zookeeper, but watching your animals closely, taking good notes, you know, asking questions when you need to, those are skills that they're actually looking for. So they actually really like it when our students have research experience because they know that they've sort of gone through that process. Obviously, if you're going into a more research-based field, then having a research background so that you know what you're interested in and what is it like to do research is really important. And then even what we're seeing in a lot of our pre-health students, that they may not have started Ohio Wesleyan realizing it, but a lot of medical schools and pre-health fields actually look very favorably upon research, again, because it's showing sort of a dedication to seeing a project through and to understanding how that process works, even if they're not doing it once they go beyond Ohio Wesleyan.
Mm-hmm. It's like they got that experience, and now everything they do is kind of a research-based opportunity if you look at it.
Yeah, that's a great way of thinking about it.
I'm going to ask on the flip side of that. So they're taking all of these skills after they graduate and they have learned all of these things, but looping back to their first year as freshmen, what does that look like for opportunities for first and second year students? Because mm-hmm. I know a lot of institutions are offering opportunities for juniors and seniors and preparing for that next step after they graduate. But what does that look like for freshmen and sophomores who are hoping to get involved in that and hoping to engage in those research opportunities early on in their careers?
So we actually really like it when students have a research interest right off the bat. And the reason is because often if we can bring in some of our students that are starting off, then we can really work with them and train them in research throughout, you know, 3 or 4 years of time at Ohio Wesleyan. And so by the time they're a senior, they're really independent. They're able to do some really fantastic work. So a lot of the sciences will actually use some of our freshman tutorials that instead of those being formatted like a class, they're really centered around a research project, and we bring in students that way. And then depending on, you know, as students are maybe going through some of their introductory classes or working that way, I've had students ask me about ways to get involved with the lab, maybe just on a you know, once in a while basis, joining in a lab meeting or seeing what else is happening. And we've even had some students that come in and they know they want to do research right away. They're ready to get involved. And so I'm able to bring them in. So I've had, everyone freshman through sophomore working in my lab, really across the board.
I'm really glad to hear you say that because I've been telling prospective families this every time they visit. And I'm just glad. I'm glad that you're able to confirm that the professors are looking at those intro-level classes. Like, if a student expresses interest, you all notice that.
Absolutely.
And in the small class environment, the students are able to articulate, I'm really interested in this research, or I'm really interested in that. And you can connect them to different professors who are doing that type of research on campus. And I'm really glad that you are able to say, yes, that is what we do. Because I think sometimes we talk in the admission office of, like, these things are really great in theory, but how are they happening? Where are they happening? So I'm really excited that students are able to get involved so early on.
Yeah, and like I said, it can be really fun. And for some students, it might not be, jumping right into an independent study with, 20 hours a week in the lab or something like that. But it's just sort of starting to dip your toes in and seeing if that's something you like. And it's fun, especially when you get some of those intro students. And I think for many of us that teach in some of the intro classes, one of the things that we try and do when we're covering some of the intro topics is, oh, okay, so we're talking about this. Well, here's actually a faculty member that does that. That even me, we tend to think of, the people that are in our textbooks or that we read scientific papers about as being like, some different group. Really, that's all of us as scientists. And so I love it when I can be like, oh, well, Dr. Wolverton just published a paper on that, or Dr. Downing just is doing some research on that. Also to show the idea that it's, we're not this isolated thing. We're part of this larger scientific community and that they can be involved in that as well. One of our intro projects that our students actually helped collect data for was part of Dr. Lori Anderson's, she's part of this ARIN network, which is, they do ecology across multiple different schools. And there was a person in there that was looking at the impacts of urbanization on turtles. And the data that we collected at Ohio Wesleyan as part of our intro labs was actually part of that larger data set that was published. And so we still actually do the lab, and I can be like, well, here, look, this is the paper that our data was part of. So it's kind of cool.
That is so cool. I mean, we hear about students who come in undecided in general, but for those students who come in and they know, I want to do biology, I want to do anatomy or whatever it is, but they still don't exactly know what that means. It takes that one mention of a professor or a program or some sort of experience that they can latch on to go, oh, this is something really cool that I want to do.
Right.
And so it's things like that I think draw people in to take that next step into their interests.
Well, and I think that we get in zoology, because it's pretty unusual to have a zoology department, especially at a smaller school. But because we do, I think we get a lot of students that come here because they love animals. And so one of the fun parts of our job is saying, okay, great. Now we get to tell you all the different things that you can do, all the sort of myriad, careers and paths and everything that you can do with those. And that by the time you graduate, you're going to have the training to do, many of those actually. And we're going to help you figure out which one you want to do.
That's really.
It warms our hearts. This is my favorite part of doing this podcast, is getting to hear the connection that students are making and the growth that they have throughout their 4 years. It's not just you come in, get your degree, and leave. That's just not how it works at OWU. Like, if you want to just get a degree, this may not be the place, because you're going to build so many relationships and connections. And hearing you talk about the direct connection between students and professors and those relationships that you build over time, everyone has talked about that so far. And when we say the small school connection is real, it's so real.
I think that, when you're a student, you think about why you might want to come to a small school and be a student, have that environment. But that's also true for faculty. When we're hiring faculty, we're often intentionally looking at what have the faculty done that make it clear to us that they want to also be teaching at a small school. And so for us, it's also fun. We want to be here because the students are here. We're not, as much as I love my research, I'm here because the part of it that I actually love the best is doing research with students and teaching them about it. I don't want to be off by myself. I want to be the person doing the teaching and teaching the labs and seeing those little sparks go off. So.
Okay, so one question that I really wanted to just hear what your thoughts on were, and you mentioned it a little bit. I mean, your classmate when you were doing the Galapagos Islands trip was a Spanish major. And when we think of research, we usually think of the natural sciences, the hard sciences, that kind of a thing. But it can be different than that.
Sure.
So do you have any insight on, you know, students conducting research in maybe other areas, whether it be humanities or social sciences or music or anything like that? Do you have anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for me, some of the experiences that I had that showed me sort of the wide variety of research that was happening across campus is one of our ongoing things that we do, which is the student symposium that happens every spring. And a new director has taken over, but I directed that for 2 years. And that includes, obviously, some science students, but we have students from every field. It's absolutely amazing. And so everything from, you know, maybe some of our fine arts students doing performance pieces all the way through students that did, you know, history research or independent studies or book research that they've done. And it's, you know, taking all of these theory to practice grants the students have had and really bringing some of that information back. And they've also been really working on doing the student version of the iCubed talks. And so that's happening again this year, which is super fun. And in fact, some of the social sciences are actually the most represented disciplines in the student symposium. And so you get it from across the board. I think for me, some of my most personal experiences were that was joining a travel learning trip that Dr. Ellen Arnold leads, and it's called Castles and Cathedrals. And it went to Luxembourg, Germany, and France. And I was the backup. I was the second. And I obviously hadn't taken the course and or anything. But I got to go on this trip. And then I would walk around with the students and, you know, maybe hang out towards the back and say, wait, why are we here? What's important about this castle? What's special? And they knew and they could tell me, right? And so they got to be the teachers and teach me all of the things about what I was learning. And I didn't know, you know, a lot of the basics. And so they could really clue me in so that by the end, it was a bit of role reversal and that they were able to do that because they had become the experts and really taken on some of those projects. And at different castles and cathedrals, students also acted as tour guides. So they had done research to put together pamphlets and you know, lead the rest of us and give us information as if they were the person being the tour guide at that place.
That is so cool.
It really was. It was very cool.
That is so a-woo.
Yeah, for sure.
Having the student be the professor.
Yeah. And they did a great job. Like I said, by the end, I sort of felt like I knew what I was doing and what the major points were. And that's what you really hope.
Big shout out to Ellen Arnold, too, though, because that class is very popular. We talk about it all the time in the admission office. To know that students are going on these really exciting trips. And we've just heard so many really we've heard a lot of great feedback from that trip. So I love that you were there.
Yeah. Well, and I found out about the trip because we had a zoology major who went on, she was a history minor and who went on Castles and Cathedrals the first time it traveled and then came back and said such good things that when the opportunity arose for me to join the trip, I was like, well, I've heard all about it. So yeah, sign me up. I'm ready.
I love that. Awesome. So, that being said, is there anything else about research that you think that students need to know that we haven't talked about yet?
Or any advice for, like, an incoming student?
Don't be afraid if you don't know what you're doing to start off with. None of us did. Often, sometimes we still don't, right? Because of all of those hiccups that happen. That it can be even among the professors that you have, and you may feel like you have a great relationship in the classroom, it can be a little intimidating to sort of go to an office and be like, hey, will you work with me? But we actually really love that as faculty because, you know, this is often something that we're really passionate and engaged with. And so if a student's like, well, hey, I want to be part of that too, we actually really think that's great. And so don't be afraid that you're like, well, I don't have enough experience or I don't know enough. That's the whole point of research, is to learn something about it. Usually, it doesn't take much. If you're interested and engaged, we can teach you how to do the research. You just have to bring the enthusiasm.
What a great loop back to the beginning.
Ding!
I love that. Well, Shayla, thank you so much for joining us today on Bishop Banter.
Yeah. Now we know who to go to whenever animals come to campus.
There we go.
Perfect. Well, we will see you around campus, Shayla.
See you guys, and thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Tune in next time for some more Bishop Banter.
And make sure to check us out at OWU Admission on Instagram and Twitter, and find us wherever you listen to your podcasts. See you next time.